Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I'll tell you later.
Welcome to the proper way to build your business with your host, Greg Jones.
This portion of the Keys was brought to us by Rafika Consultants and Services, LLC. Rafika Consultants and Services, LLC is on the cutting edge of emerging technologies for designing online classes and providing face-to-face and virtual technology training or help with computer programs, web design, and graphic arts. We also provide biography writing services for websites. For more information, give us a call at 631-399-0149. That's 631-399-0149. Of the Keys on Blog Talk Radio was brought to you by The Fluffs Present the Alphabet, now found in paperback, sporting a 5-star rating on Amazon.com. This portion of the Keys was brought to us by Moon107.com. Moon 107, fashions and gifts that bring out the best in you. Moon 107 is an online retail store featuring women's and men's clothing. And the gift shop, the woman's shop, features stylish tunics, suits, and accessories, and offers the well-dressed woman an outlet to find the perfect gift for self or for someone else. The men's shop offers classy French cuffed shirts for the well-dressed man. The gift shop offers organic skin, hair, bath accessories, and inspirational music imported from Africa, India, and Asia, as well as jewelry and accessories. Moon 107, fashions and gifts that bring out the best in you. Don't forget to visit moon107.com.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Build Your Business with Greg Jones on a Monday morning. And although it's raining outside, it's sunny in here. Greg, are you with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's just get started. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I had some setbacks this morning that I have to deal with before I go into the office today. But like I tell anybody, and this is why I love Monday so much, because in my opinion, you know, a setback ain't nothing but a setup for a comeback.
That's right.
And I'm happy it happened on Monday because I got more energy and more love for this day than any day of the week. So it's like they picked the wrong day to try to come against me because I mean, you know, I always say this, you know, I got this one from my dad. You can't be champion unless you're willing to get in the ring. And the way it works, somebody's getting knocked out. So either you or what you're up against. And I've always said that I'm unstoppable. So I'm pretty fired up. So, you know, and this is kind of a good segue because today's subject matter is outwitting the six ghosts of fears. I didn't invent this, but as a person who's a speaker with the Napoleon Hill Foundation and a person who's actually writing an updated version of the book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. People will be blown away this summer when that book actually comes out because what I've done is added a modern context to describe two cultural situations. One, the perplexing difficulty for people of color to actually achieve the American dream because a lot of times from our perspective, the American dream seems to be coming with fine print. And then there's the collective American problem where, as a nation, we've lost the what I call the Amer-I-can attitude for excellence. So when I took what Napoleon Hill wrote in the 1930s, I'm bringing it into the year 2013 with a look at dealing with life that'll be here by 2025. I traveled to the future and I'm back. And what I have to share about what the future is going to do, and I don't mean in some psycho way, somebody might hear that and go, okay, he went to the future? No, I've been studying trends for the last 6 years, and with the help of the Harry S. Dent Foundation, who's a well-known economist and futurist, I've been able to take a lot of data from that gentleman's organization and the Harvard Business School risk management program and put together some models that will blow people away. I have 10 predictions I'm going to make in that book about the future, and if people tap into just one of them, you potentially could be amongst the richest people or the richest families. Because what most people don't understand, and this is why building your business, this show is so pertinent, because it helps give a context to people so they can understand that books like The Origin of the Species, The Son of Man by Charles Darwin, he makes a point that most people misquote about survival of the fittest. That's actually a misquote. It's survival of the fittest species. And in corporate America, the current business structures that exist are incompetent for long-term survival. So they are basically following the same path of the dodo bird. And the dodo bird is an extinct species. And the dodo bird became extinct because when it first encountered the Spaniards, because of its nature, it didn't know how to differentiate between enemies and friends. So it was wiped out. Well, when something is incompetent as a species, the natural order of natural selection begins identifying weaknesses that lead to the removal of that thing. So what we're looking at today is business on its way out, as we all understand it. And growing up as a huge fan of Star Trek, the sociologists and the social commentary Gene Roddenberry wrote, which became the famous show Star Trek, he used the concept that most people who watch that show miss, and that is there's never any money in Star Trek because your currency becomes your ability, what you can contribute to it. So as we build businesses, and this is why every week I always start off with one, thank you, because in order to have the correct success as a business, you must, one, embody the spirit of gratitude.
Yes.
The words thank you are the two most powerful words in any language on planet Earth. They're more powerful than I apologize. So I tell people if they have a spirit of gratitude as they go to service others, building their business, they'll be unstoppable. But there are six basic fears identified by the late Napoleon Hill that I've added a huge amount of commentary to, because fear and fears are very, 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 very powerful, but they need to be understood that a fear is nothing more than a state of mind. And because it's a state of mind, it's subject to direct and control by the mind upon which it is entering. Now, there are six basic fears that every human suffers from at least one point or another, if not all of them simultaneously.
Before we go into the first one, let's give out the call-out number, because we do have some callers on the line. I'm not really sure if they want to speak. But the number is 213-943-3618. 213-943-3618, and press number 1 on your keypad. Otherwise, we don't know if you have a question or you're just a listener. So let's go back, Greg.
All right,
sorry to interrupt you. I had to get that number out.
No, please. Please. We need to get that number out, because I know there's some scared people on this phone. They ain't to tell me. They ain't never got to dial in. And I also want to put it out there that only a fool is never afraid. Only crazy people have no fears. But the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that unsuccessful people don't know how to feel the fear and do it anyway. Susan Jeffers wrote a book by that title that people really need to go run out and read today. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Like, for instance, the gentleman, I forget it, Siegfried and Roy, anybody stupid enough to stick their head inside a lion's mouth is an insane person. So when he got his head gobbled up by the lion, I'm sitting there looking at the TV. They angry at the lion? That's what lions do. If you stick your head inside their mouth. And I mean, you know, well, so dealing with the six basic fears in their order of importance, and people can write this down. One is the fear of poverty, the fear of criticism, and the fear of ill health. Now, these three in particular are at the bottom of most people's worries in life. Mm-hmm. And those are known as the major three. Now, there's three other ones, the loss of love of someone, the fear of old age, and the fear of death. Now, the fear of poverty is by all stretches of the imagination, one of the most important, because what people need to understand is that man can't create anything without first conceiving it in the form of a thought. And one thing Dr. Hill, you know, pointed out, that man's thought impulses begin immediately to translate themselves into their physical equivalent, whether those thoughts are voluntary or involuntary. See, the brain, they know now. Neuroscientists and neurophysiologists have made a determination, which is no longer theory but fact, that the brain is both the receiving and transmission station. And human thought is nothing more than vibrations of energy. And as such, it can pick up on thoughts that have been released into the mental atmosphere. That's why the idea, Solomon said in the scripture, that there are no new ideas. There is no new knowledge. Everything that was known has already been here, and it's just being rediscovered. Years ago, I met Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. He wrote the book. He came to my school back in the 80s, and he gave a speech called They Came Before Columbus.
Right.
And most humans that have read his book have completely missed what Dr. Sertima was trying to explain. At no point was his contention that the Egyptians taught the other civilizations how to build things from pyramids. What he said is that there is contact and proof of the Egyptians because of what was going on at that time in the world, the war against the Asians.
Right.
They had blocked the seaport, so the Egyptians had spread out as far as Hawaii into Central and South America. The Egypt-Nubian concept, which I'll connect this to the six basic fears, is by spreading out into the known world. What he was trying to get people to understand is that the mindset of a human that could create the pyramids doesn't exist. See, what this modern culture is trying to do is fill in the void of consciousness and lack of fear with technology. That is why when they look at the wonders of the world, they remain wonders. But if we could get into the mindset of a mastermind who wrote and designed this, think about this for a second. Most of us look at something simple as water, and we hold up a glass of water and we look at it and it's clear. We say to ourselves, this is water. But water comes in many different colors, red, purple, green, blue. In fact, that's why in the ancient world, especially in Egypt, all of the high societies who were free of fear and had the ability to see beyond sight, normal sight, used the color purple. Well, I tell people, in order to completely transform your life, this is all of us. I'm in there with everybody. I don't make it seem like I got the patent on this stuff, but I try to live it. Is you have to free your mind of these six ghosts. And the reason why I refer to them as ghosts more than just states of mind, because ghosts can be seen with the naked eye, but they're illusions. Now, I know some paranormal people listening. Feel free to call in. But for the sake of the argument, I am expressing that a ghost is even more powerful than just a state of mind, and we have to remove these six ghosts. And because if people understand that the whole concept of life is nothing more than matter and energy. So if you are in a state of mind, like for instance, the people who live in the projects and the housing developments, it is no mistake that there are no more housing developments anywhere in the United States except and I'm gonna, people may challenge this, but there are no more housing developments anywhere in the United States except in New York City.
Hmm.
There's a reason. My aunt Michelle wrote a book called Invisible Warrior. It's actually a memoir of her experience escaping the dream-shattering reality of the projects of the Bronx and Bronx River. Bronx River is actually the first project, project / my note, experiment that they did in New York City in the 1950s. They built it. In fact, it had the most capitalization. It had the most money behind it. It was the best sculpted, manicured project or housing development in New York City. Because what they were doing is grouping people together to see and study the effects of mass poverty in an environment where you're looking out at the world, but you can never see what you're looking at.
Hmm.
So what people need to understand is, if you're still in the quote-unquote PJs, the projects, or if you're in a cycle of poverty in your town, which could be anywhere in this country, and this is not relegated to black people, Latinos, it's everybody. There's a growing gap between the have and the have-nothings. The middle class is being decimated, and every single president has lied to us. And people need to understand that. Not that I'm against voting. Hell, I voted for Obama. But I voted for Obama for a very intelligent reason, which I won't cover in this subject matter today. But if nothing else, people need to understand that every single act written into the law, when you change the law, you change the future, not the present. Everything you see today, and even up to the second inauguration, with all due respect, was planned with the first one. So every act, there's this contention that goes on, and they have the masses of the American people confused and fear. They are enacting and pushing the fear of poverty, the most deadly of the six basic fears, on the people. Because what happens is, when you're in a state of poverty, you are completely paralyzed to do anything, which reduces us back to the state of mind of children, which is, government help us. The government wasn't designed to help us. The free enterprise model of the United States is what makes the United States second to none in this planet. But the power of the people, back to Dr. Ivan Van Sertima's concept, is when you come into contact with someone without fear, someone whose mind can develop and build a civilization, you are no longer the same. Doesn't mean that I gave you the instructions on how to do something, but if you come into contact with me, my energy pattern, my energy signature that makes me me, can change you too. And I tell people, you have to become a certain person internally on an energy level to even begin to encompass and understand what is referred to as the six wonders. Because the roads that lead to riches and the roads that lead to poverty travel in the opposite directions. Make no mistake about it. If you want riches, you have to absolutely refuse to accept any circumstance that leads toward poverty. Now, when I use the term riches, I'm referring in its broadest sense, meaning financial, spiritual, mental, material, all the concepts that the Keys Network is based on. But the starting point of all wealth and riches is desire. When we talked about the week before, desire is everything. But the thing I tell people, a poverty consciousness and what I call a prosperity consciousness, if you do nothing, a poverty consciousness is the default position your brain takes, and it will pick up on thoughts sent out by others to keep you in that state of mind. If anybody wants proof, look in the projects. There are brilliant people in the projects. There are people who bust their ass, and I have to say it that way, every single day taking care of their families. The average person that lives in the projects is not on welfare, contrary to the image of a person in the projects. But why are they there? because they don't believe that a reality greater than what they're experiencing, Rafika and folks, is possible. It paralyzes reason. I tell people, if you want to know some symptoms of the fear of poverty, it's indifference. It's expressed through a lack of ambition, indecision. I call that the habit of permitting others to do your thinking. My dad calls it staying on the fence. It's doubt. You look at people full of their relatives, like they're related to a man I call old man alibi. They got a reason for everything. Well, if I only had more money, if I only had more education, if I only had more knowledge, if I was only a better speaker, if I didn't have this person as my husband, if I didn't have this person as my wife, if only I had finished high school, if I only got my GED. Let me tell you the if that every human has to ask themselves to escape this. If you only had the guts to see ourselves as we really are, we could make the change and escape. But instead, other symptoms are like doubt, worry, overcaution. People tell you, oh, I'm not the type to just dive in. No, you're scared. The fear of poverty is so, it fires me up talking about this because it's so damn dangerous. But its greatest manifestation is procrastination. My aunt, who's a preacher and a professional speaker, I love my family because these folks are some fired up people. I see where I get it from. I stand on the shoulders of giants. But my aunt always says, Africa is not the most precious place on the planet. That's my aunt Karen Jackson. She said this, it is the graveyard, because in the graveyard are buried unfinished dreams, ambitions, goals, books, careers, marriages, relationships. So instead of demanding more, what happens is people end up just kind of doing the what I call settle for whatever, and they end up making the statements like, well, hell, it could always be worse. No. If you say that to yourself, what ends up happening is it becomes worse. The rapper KRS-One has a verse that, unfortunately, most people who aren't into hip-hop have never heard. But the one thing is from this song he has called Ah Yeah, S-A-H-Y-E-A-H, for people listening. And in that song, the one thing, I listen to it all the time, because there's a verse in there that people really need to hear, and I wrote it down just to make sure that people could hear it. And he says, and I quote, "This is not the first time I came to the planet, but every time I come, only a few could understand it. I came as ISIS, my words they tried to ban it. I came as Moses, but they couldn't follow my commandments. I came as Solomon to a people that was lost. I came as Jesus, but they nailed me to a cross. I came as Harriet Tubman, I put the truth to Sojourner, and other times I had to come as Nat Turner. They tried to burn me, lynch me, and starve me, so I had to come back as Marcus Garvey, Bob Marley. They tried to harm me, I used to be Malcolm X. Now I'm on the planet as the one called KRS. I tell people, the thing about that song that I love so much is he's telling you the mindset of change is always here. The mindset of success is always here. But you got to overcome these fears. And it's funny, women conceal despair differently from men. A lot of times they commit suicide. When a man is down and out, he has time on his hands for brooding. This is why the bars are filled. A man can travel many miles to see a man about a job and discover that the job is filled, and that one of those jobs with no base pay, only commission, is available. And he'll take it if the person will accept him out of pity. But women, on the other hand, make choices that end up with them not always killing themselves physically. When I say suicide, it doesn't mean they cut their throats. But they end up losing the creative power that only a woman can offer to a man. This is why this is the etymological root out of the Latin for the word, for the famous phrase, behind every man is a woman.
Mm.
Everything that men do is for the attention of females. Everything that women do is for the attention of humanity. It's a broader sense, but men, when they are moved to escape the fear of poverty, it's usually to impress upon to impress a woman. It could be to impress their daughter, a mistress, a wife, their mother. But when you involve the concept of sex, it embodies the human mind, especially the men. Men are different. It embodies the human mind to step up to such a high rate of vibration that it can shatter the known barriers between the finite mind of man and what is loosely referred to as the mind of God. But the man must learn to convert and transmute sexual energy into its spiritual equivalent. That's why generally men don't become successful until at least the age of 40. But in this modern culture, where you have mediocre people commending and complimenting themselves as excellent, they've taken the gap filled in by technology when actually there's no consciousness. So people are looking at the Fortune 500. The Fortune 500 is an illusion. Forbes puts this ridiculous list out, and the 85%, the masses of the planet Earth, chime in every day and look at who's on the list. I even used to do it before I got myself awakened and say, man, okay, if I'm not on that list, I got to bust my butt and do blah, 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 close bigger deals to get on it. Let me explain something to you. The only reason why the Fortune 500 appears to be wealthy is because currently it's connected to paper assets. America is in the most dangerous position this country has ever been in. They produce nothing here. So the Fortune 500, 97% of those humans on that list have their wealth connected to a paper-based asset of what's known as Wall Street. If there are any changes in the structure or the nature of markets, Warren Buffett could be poorer than a single woman with five children living in the projects right now. Walmart, the famous monolithic giant, the world's largest retailer, doesn't even own the stores it operates in. All of that family's wealth is tied up in stock. There's only a couple of really wealthy people left on that list. It's Donald Trump, Ted Turner, Bill Gates is converting all of what he has into something more real. I've heard him and Warren Buffett when they came to Columbia University in relation to the six deadly fears, six basic fears. He said this, and nobody got it, so I'm going to say it because no one heard when he said it. He says, 20 years from now, I'll be irrelevant. If I don't do something different, Microsoft probably won't be around.
Mm.
And if we are, there'll be someone to replace us because of the rise of India, the central bloc of Asia, and China. Those are his words, end quote. They can pull it up if they like. He was there last summer, him and Warren Buffett. Why is it that the richest people in the world have now all decided to give their money away? Are people that stupid? Do they really believe that these humans have now all of a sudden become the most ecumenical, charitable people? I'm not saying that there's nothing charitable about their doing, but I am saying that it's a business decision. Let me give everybody who's 99% of the people know nothing about finance. So let me explain to everybody what's going on. In Fortune 500 companies, or what they call corporations in the United States, they currently are subject to something known as corporate governance. This is the result of what happened with WorldCom and Enron, where CEOs used to be able to say, oh, the CFO was still in it? I didn't know. The CFO can go, what, the chief intelligence officer and the CEO were in cahoots? I didn't know. Everybody doesn't pass go. They go straight to jail now. That's called corporate governance. It was signed into law under another name that you've all heard of called the Sarbanes-Oxley Act by two senators who introduced it, and it was signed into law. Well, guess what? It's not for profits. There's no corporate governance. That means it's right back to how America corporations were during the time of the gold rush, meaning nothing but opportunity. The rules haven't even been written. You can hide, distribute, share money in ways that would blow the average person's mind. That's why I said a couple of weeks ago, leading up, because I knew I'd be talking about this at this point, I told everyone, you need a not-for-profit and a for-profit company. If you want wealth, which is what I think people should go after instead of riches, riches as defined by Forbes magazine, and somebody earns $1 million or more per year. Wealth, though, is measured in time. So the fear of poverty, and the reason I spend the most time on it, is because the fear of poverty is the foundation for the other two major fears, which are the fear of criticism. Now, no one can be certain how people got to this point, but I will tell you this, because I'm not some prophet or some overly deep person, but I do know this, that for some untold reason, people do this. They go, I'm afraid of what they'll think. I always tell people all the time, who the hell is they? When I was a little boy, I remember I was in the eighth grade, 13 years old. There was a party. And I'm aging myself. I had a pair of British walkers. And I think AJ or Devil's Jeans or something. We was at this party for the school. And I could still see it as clearly as day. And Run DMC was playing. It's like that. And all the boys were lined up on one side of the gym, and all the girls were lined up on the other side of the gym. And the lights are playing, and nobody wants to go on the dance floor. And I'm looking at my boys. I'm like, y'all going to stay here all night? And so they were like, so what are you going to do? I said, I'm about to go ask them to dance. So here I am as this lone child walking across, teenager, walk across the floor. And there was this girl named Jessica who I wanted to dance with. So I targeted her. I went straight to her. And I said to her, you want to dance? She said no. So I looked to Lydia, who was standing right next to her. She said no. Folks, I asked eight girls. The tenth one said yeah. And then we was on the dance floor dancing, and then everybody else started dancing behind us. I learned that day, and I know more about what I did that day. I was blessed. The fear of criticism is not something I'm a subject of. And I'm still that 13-year-old guy. Well, guess what? Every single person has had an opportunity where they had to overcome the fear of criticism.
That's right.
Because if you didn't, you can't do anything. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it robs you completely of initiative, destroys
right?
imagination. And limits individuality and takes away self-reliance. So
it starts when you're young, Greg, criticism.
Especially when you're young. There's a recent issue of the New Yorker that talks about we are who we are, we are who we were in high school. I said this all the time, and I'm going to say a name because I need to give context to people. Anytime you see a lot of these men who become rich and famous as adults, and you hear these crazy stories about what they do to women, I would be willing to bet all the money I have in the bank that when they were younger, these are the guys that girls didn't want to play catch and kiss with. These are the ones when they play spin the bottle, they spun it to the next girl. These are the ones that nobody had love for. And now they're rich. But guess what? There's still these angry teenagers. In a recent issue of the New Yorker magazine, they point out, they give some neurophysiology and neuroscientific data and relevance on this, because criticism that we experience as teenagers has an overwhelming, because the frontal lobe of the brain hasn't been fully constructed. So since the limbic system, which regulates emotional control, is on fire. So everything that we listen to or we liked generally between 16 and 22, you're probably still listening to this day.
Mm.
Like me, that was a hip-hop era. I listened to Paid in Full like it just came out by Eric B. and Rakim. I find myself doing the wop, doing the dishes sometime in here. My wife is like,
oh, now you are really telling your age.
I am definitely telling my age. You know, all the way to heaven, Dougie Fresh,
six
and Slick Rick.
Then you're doing the wop. Okay.
I'm doing the wop. My head was just moving as I said it. But I tell people, that was a powerful time. Then I became a young adult and I went off to college. And I tell people, that is who we are. But you see, I had a very positive experience. Thank God I'm the guy girls did want to play catch and kiss with. Jesus Christ. So I'm happy. So I have, and then I had a powerful image of a mother who's this beautiful, tall, intelligent, well-respected, articulate person. So I had all this, and I watched my father, who they've been together since they were 13, still in love with her.
Hmm.
So I always wanted that. So I always had a romantic feel when it came to women, as it was never dogging them out.
Hmm.
But a lot of times, that's not the experience of a lot of men in particular. So because we suffer from the fear of criticism at a very young age, we grow up with the self-consciousness that expresses itself through nervousness, timidity in conversation. That's when you know someone's afraid. And I'm talking about people who, there's a difference between conservative and shy and afraid. It's okay to be a little conservative. I'm talkative. I'm that person that you see at an event. You're like, damn, he knows everybody. No, I just got here. I just believe that I'm valuable, and I believe so is everybody else at the party, and because I'm so interested in hearing about them, I look interesting. But you can tell when someone has a fear of criticism. Another serious symptom is lack of poise. You can hear them. It's this lack of voice control, poor posture. They can't ever seem to remember anything. Their personality, lack of firmness of decision, personal charm, the habit of sidestepping issues. Oh, no, I'd rather not quote on it. Let me tell you something. My dad says this, and we've all heard this quote. If you don't stand for something, you fall for anything.
That's right.
Pick a damn position. The person who stands in the middle of the road eventually gets hit by the swerving car. Just pick a position. And hell, that's what makes us adults. Inferiority complex. You see this more often than anything else. It's that habit of expressing self-approval by word of mouth. Because you want to mask inferiority. So you see these people, they'll use big words to impress others, usually without knowing the real meaning. So they look like complete idiots. Imitating others in their dress, their speech, and their manners. It happens in religious communities. They all want to dress like the leader of it, yet their means are far less than what that leader may be able to work with. Happens all the time in church and mosque and in religion. You see this all the time. It's the concept of keeping up with the Joneses. I remember my dad said this when we were young. Don't you ever keep up with the Joneses. Your name's already Jones.
Name's already Jones.
He was like, I can hear my father, because he would say lack of initiative.
Mm.
Failure to embrace self-advancement. You're afraid of expressing your opinions. Lack of confidence in your own ideas. Giving evasive answers to questions asked by superiors. My father said this, speak the truth regardless to who or what. Look a man in his face. Don't blink.
Mm.
So people end up deceitful in word and deed. So their word is not bond. I tell people, there's a difference between a mistake and an error. According to Webster's first preferred definition of the word mistake, it is an unintentional act. An error is activity that proved to be incorrect. Most people are guilty of error. They made a decision, but they call it mistakes. And it leads to a lack of ambition, mental and physical laziness. Oprah Winfrey, who I like Oprah Winfrey a lot. I like her friend Gail even more. I find her to be sharper. But Oprah's a heavyweight. But Oprah has a great saying, and that is, it is better to be prepared and not have an opportunity than to have an opportunity and not be prepared.
That's right.
You have to get at some point reaching it where you got to overcome the slowness in reaching decisions. You can tell someone suffering from the fear of criticism when they're easily influenced by others. However, they do all the criticizing of others behind their backs.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's bad.
While they flatter them to their face. That's somebody who suffers from the fear of criticism. Two-faced people. It's the habit of accepting defeat without protest, quitting an undertaking when opposed by others. That's like someone saying to you, Rafika, you're not going to be a success. And you go, I guess I'm not. And then you just sort of do it. I tell people who lack tactfulness in speech, those are people who suffer from the fear of people think they get off the hook by calling themselves rude. I can see them. Who they really are when they're like that. Also, people who are in positions of authority yet are unwilling to accept the blame. We've all worked for or been in a situation where a person wants to be in charge, yet they take all the glory to themselves and give all the blame to their subordinates. It cracks me up. And this leads to hypochondriac behavior, which is a symptom of the next great fear called the fear of ill health. Now, I tell people, this one is related to the fear of old age, because one of the things about it is it's quite natural for people to have a sense of their mortality as we get older. But who, and women suffer from this more than men. In this culture, especially in the Western culture, after 40 women are put out the pasture, they don't use the terms hot, beautiful, generally with women. That's something relegated for women of a younger age. So women after they're 40, they start thinking they're old. I'm a scriptural person. Scripture says a baby will die at 100. So if you ain't working with at least, and I've heard a scientist say at one point, it takes 75 years to learn how to live. If you ain't 75, I look at you like you're a baby. If people don't think about this, why do physicians tend to get less of the diseases that the general population faces, yet they are working daily with those diseases? I'll tell you why. They have absolutely no fear of it. So it allows for them to engage it. Like when the flu was an epidemic at one point, and it does have pops where it pops up. If you notice, when the newspapers, this is why I see the connection of things all the time, the flu starts spreading quicker after the news starts reporting on it. I wish I had the capital reserves, I will eventually, where I could do a global study on these six fears as it relates to health. Because I'm almost certain that in a lot of the cases, and I have an inkling and a feeling about cancer, that a portion of this comes, and I know the cause of cancer because no one does, but I believe there are some instances where people are catching these violent diseases because of the states of mind that their body was in for decades.
Well, let's hold that thought, Greg, and let's out the number, go to a quick commercial break and come back and get back on that fear. And I'm just curious to what you want to say about how to get over that fear.
Yep.
So hang on a minute. The phone number is 213-943-3618. That's 213-943-3618. Press the number 1 so that we'll know you want to talk. Be right back.
Keys 107 and the FOI Board of Directors is proud to present The Final Call. The Final Call is the country's unique leading source for news.
founded by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam. The Final Call follows in the tradition of Muhammad Speaks, with hard-hitting national and international news and coverage of political issues. It is the official communications organ of the Nation of Islam. Founded in the 1930s as the Final Call to Islam, the newspaper evolved into Muhammad Speaks in the 1960s and boasted a circulation of 900,000 a week, with monthly circulation of 2.5 million. Today, the Final Call newspaper serves a readership of diverse economic and educational backgrounds, including circulation in North America, Europe, Africa, and the Caribbean. Read the Final Call newspaper. You can find one of the beautifully bow-tied representatives in your community, or read finalcall.com.
Hey, hey, you! Bring that microphone over here. I want to tell you something. My name is Bobby, and I've been living homeless on the streets of New York for years. And the only reason why I'm eating out of dumpsters and I'm living without my family is because I lost my keys. Listen to Keys 107 on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back to Build Your Business with Greg Jones. And Greg is talking about the six major fears: the fear of poverty, criticism, ill health, loss of love, old age, and death. That's a lot on a Monday. Greg.
Yeah, but you know what? Got to deal with this stuff. I've been working with this stuff, the subject matter, for almost 20 years. It's at the root of my coaching and my consulting. My coaching stuff is mental toughness training for business executives, because you have to be mentally tough in order to acquire and attract capital, which is my expertise, helping ordinary people raise the capital for their ideas, be it from the federal government, private citizens, private money, hard money, you name it. Any idea can be acquired, and I have a blueprint that people will be able to get when they sign up for the coaching. I'm opening all this stuff up March 1st to new people. I have something I wrote called the $1 Billion Business Plan. And at the root of the $1 Billion Business Plan is how to overcome the six basic fears and the seventh deadly sin, which I'll talk about shortly, so that you can acquire money. Because if a person can overcome the six deadly fears, get mentally tough, and know exactly what they're doing and be able to explain it in 10 words or less and articulate it on paper if they're no good at talking, then they're most likely in a situation where they can attract the necessary capital. I tell people all the time, you must be able to inspire people, be it the federal government, your mama, your boyfriend, your man, your husband, partner, relation. I don't care what it is. Inspiration leads to capitalization. And unfortunately, most people think because they're doing something good, what they're basically asking for is a handout, because they think because it's good on its own, it should garner attention. And I'm going to tell people they are sadly mistaken. But behind their inability to achieve it is they are victims of the six basic fears. That's why I started by telling people suffer from either all of them or at least some of them at any given point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways to defeat the fear of ill health, which is most symptomatically seen by a lack of exercise, susceptibility to breaking down the nature's, the body's natural resistance, hypochondria. That's the habit of talking about illness. Somebody's always saying, yeah, I don't feel well. I'm always sick. My back hurts, my neck, and my foot. I tell people all the time, if you want to study how to deal with pain, sure, you can go see a doctor. But before you go see a doctor, call your mama up if she's still around. Or call any woman you respect up who's had children. And tell you something funny about women. Most women, I can't say all women, but most women, the pain of childbirth is experienced, is replaced by the love of what they gave birth to.
Mm.
No human can sustain the pain that women sustain. It is a life of pain. the entire menstrual cycle isn't as painful for all women as it is for others. But what is going on is a consistent recreation of a vital area that's going to generate and give support to life. But men don't have conversations with women. That's why men know nothing. So if they can overcome this, which the easiest way, or the most practical, I would say, is stop coddling yourself. Stop bidding for sympathy from people. Or using imaginary illnesses to lure people in. People do this to avoid work. I don't ever call out sick if I ain't sick from the office. First of all, I'm not calling that stuff down on me. I'm not. It's better if you're an adult, first of all, and you want to go hang out, it's better to just call and say, look, I'm not coming in today.
That's right.
Have some respect for yourself. Don't sit there on the phone. How you doing, Rafika? I'm not going to make it. In fact, I probably won't make it Thursday. Oh, are you that deep? Today's Monday. I've had people when I was a manager in some of my previous positions call me on Monday and tell me they're going to be out Wednesday.
Mm.
They're not going to feel good. I would restate it back to them. You're not going to feel good Wednesday. You do realize today's Monday. Yes, sir, Mr. Jones. Okay. I usually just got off the phone because that's so stupid. I want to make sure I don't get infected by it.
Wow.
But auto-suggestion is something I'm going to introduce to people if they haven't heard it. It's also known as self-suggestion. Auto-suggestion is introducing a working system of speaking to the involuntary part of our mind, which is known as the subconscious. Nobody can control the subconscious, but we can make requests to it. Any idea mixed with high emotion, highly emotionally charged, is how you reach the subconscious mind. This is why they say you have people who tell you, well, you got to believe it to see it. I'm telling people, they say seeing is believing, rather, but I always say the reverse. You have to believe it to see it. If you have to see something first before it comes into existence, you are a slave. If you don't have the vision to see a thing before it comes into existence, you have not appropriately attached the correct amount of desire to it. History is filled with an account of men and women who overcame adversity just to marry the woman of their dreams. The Greatest Salesman in the World by the late Og Mandino tells the tale of such a thing. Because he overcame his fears, his adversities, to qualify himself to take the hand of the woman he's interested in. That's why I tell any woman, and this is a special message for the women, I have a special message I'm giving called Cinderella Lost Her Slipper and Not Her Soul. But in that talk, I talk about this fear because it's connected to the last three, which I'm going to touch on lightly and we'll close out. But if a man is not willing, ladies, to crawl over broken glass in the desert just to get your attention, he's a waste of your time. I'm going to say something that men may disagree with. Feel free to call in, care less. Because I'm not going to change my position, but I would love to hear a difference of opinion, is this. I think if a woman doesn't have a man that's chasing her, not chasing, but pursuing, women should be the object of pursuit. Some people loosely translate what I'm saying as, he's got to love you more than you love him. That's crap.
I was just going to say that. No,
that's
come on. My dad
about.
Told me that.
No,
not true.
I'm not talking about that. I am saying he should have a pursuit for you greater than your pursuit is for him. Absolutely. 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 I'd rather see a woman conceited than a woman with no self-esteem. Because at least a conceited woman, although it's a little out there, at least she has a standard. And when you have standards, there's certain fears that don't enter into your head. One is the last of the three, is the fear of the loss of love, the fear of old age, and the fear of death. The fear of loss of love comes from, you know, men especially by nature are into stealing each other's mates. You know, in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, they have the 42 confirmations or negative propositions where it says, I have not slept with my brother's wife. And the Ten Commandments, which was adopted 3,000 years later, says, thou shalt not. I tell people, the ancient societies of the world weren't necessarily better than today, but there was a standard of excellence, which is why they achieved more with less technology. Because the idea of a person that's trying to build something can't have any of these fears. You can't be sitting there worried about your wife. My dad is the same. The keys to a successful relationship is focus on your own self-improvement and don't worry about hers. And you'll be busy the rest of your life. Because who is perfect? But when you're constantly afraid of losing the love of your interests, you end up with these famous symptoms, and they destroy all prosperity consciousness, which is what I said earlier. If you don't develop a prosperity consciousness, a poverty consciousness is the default position. These two are destructive to that, and that is, well, these three, jealousy. You're suspicious of everything he or she is doing without any reasonable evidence or sufficient grounds for the feelings. Me, I think jealousy is a form of dementia. Personally, that's just my thing. Second is fault finding. You find fault with friends, relatives, business associations, loved ones upon the slightest provocation, with or without any cause whatsoever. Three, gambling. Now, this is something that people have seen this behavior, but they may not have thought about it this way. And I call this the habit of gambling, stealing, cheating, or otherwise taking hazardous chances to provide money for loved ones with the belief that love can be bought. It's the habit of spending beyond one's means or incurring debts to provide gifts for loved ones with the object of making favorable showing. Another thing is insomnia, nervousness, lack of persistence, and weakness. Christmas in the United States is a huge example of people suffering from the fear of loss of love. You got people running out buying gifts for people they don't even like. That's simply insane to me.
It certainly is, especially when you're spending money.
Yeah, I always tell people, forget the religious connotation of Christmas.
There's no religious connotation.
You know, there is, depending on who you talk to. But I always tell people,
that's why
have the wherewithal and the money, there's not a better time of the year to get a good deal.
Before you go further, let me just tell you that you have a caller on the line, and I don't want to keep him holding too long, but do you want to take the caller now or finish
that?
Okay. We have Francisco on the line. Francisco, are you there?
I am. Hey, Greg. It's Francisco Acosta. How are you?
Francisco Acosta. How are you doing today?
I'm excellent. You know, this is really funny. I'm going to try to be very, very quick about this. But I saw you show up on Facebook this morning.
Uh-huh.
Then I checked out the post came from Twitter, so I went to Twitter. Then I saw that the show was on, and I turned it on, and then I got a phone call immediately, and it was a friend of mine talking about health concerns.
Wow.
And I wound up basically coaching him for about 20 minutes about how to get his health back on track. And then when I got back on the line, that's what you were talking about was, fear of ill health and that kind of stuff. So all of this is to say that it reminds me why we have been connected to each other for as long as we have.
Absolutely.
Because virtually every word that came out of your mouth today could have been something that I would say. And do say, and I absolutely agree with everything that you've said so far. And regarding health, by the way, how much time do I have to share this story? Because I don't want to go over your time. Okay, I don't know if you know. You might know. I don't remember. But last April, I had brain surgery, massive brain surgery. Two procedures back to back, one on a Tuesday, one on a Wednesday. I was in the hospital for a week, and it was the kind of brain surgery where the doctors told me that a lot of people lose a lot of their ability afterwards. They lose part of the function of their body. They lose the ability to speak. Their vision gets affected. There's a laundry list of things that can go wrong. And I kept a positive attitude. I never focused on any of the negatives that they talked about. In fact, I was posting on Facebook the entire time from when I was on my way to the emergency room once the tumor was discovered to when, through the surgery, after the surgery, my entire time in the hospital. I was posting to Facebook, and never once, even when I'd let people know that I've just been told that I have a life-threatening tumor, I never said, woe is me. I never said, why did this happen to me? I never said, oh, this is horrible, nothing. Never one negative thought or word came out of my mind. I was joking with the hospital staff the whole time. I never ever, the whole time I was there, looked at it in a negative way. And in fact, I will tell you, and I mean this literally and honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it caused me to refocus my life in ways that I probably wouldn't have had this not happened. I got back together with my ex-wife. I changed my life in a lot of different ways as a result of this incident, and it was because all of the things that you were talking about. It truly is about your vision and what you see and what you put out into the universe and what comes back to you. And I know I just dumped a lot of information, but that's where I'll end for now.
No, I want to say, number one, I remember that. Number two, I was one of the people praying for it to be a success. And three, that's possibly the most important thing that was said today. Because it's when you get a third party, being you, giving a practical application of this, that's what makes this stuff real. Until then, it's theory.
Yeah.
I have it in my own life, but I want to tell you I appreciate that because you reminded me of, you brought me back to that moment thinking about you, but you also brought me back to one of my favorite books I've ever read is Anatomy of an Illness by Norman Cousins.
Mm.
And Norman Cousins was the only, to this day, he's actually the only layman to ever get anything published in the American Medical Association's journal.
Yeah,
and
I talk about him a lot because he cured himself of cancer with the Three Stooges,
bingo,
basically.
Bingo. That's exactly it. And he did it through humor
and
self-awareness and consciousness that you have to connect with the bigger vision for you. And
right.
I've heard many, many physicians. I heard Ben Carson say it one time when he came and spoke at school about what gets patients through is their attitude.
Yep.
If they have something bigger than themselves to look forward to, then the fear of death, which is one of the six basic fears he had mentioned, and the fear of ill health, he says, almost are removed immediately.
Yeah, I have to say that that's true. There was not one moment, and I know this is so hard for people to believe, but I know you'll understand this. There was not one moment where I had any fear in me about anything. All I thought about, you know, like I was sad for a minute when I was told, hey, you might die, you know, because that's what I was told. I was told you have a potentially fatal brain swelling going on and you might die. You need to leave here right now and go to the emergency room, which is what I did. And I was sad for a minute thinking about, oh, I would, you know, I might not get to see my son again and this and that. You know what I mean? Like I went through that kind of thing. But that literally lasted 5 minutes, and from that moment forward, I never had another negative thought or emotion regarding my situation.
It's serious, brother. That's but you're an amazing person. I remember since the first time I met you back in our Chase days.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. I think that is one of many, but one of the primary reasons why, even to this day, we're all connected at the hip, literally. I'm happy that you called in because that is what I'm glad that when, as Rafika would say, when people can listen to this on demand, they get to hear that account. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for having me, and you know, thank you for being a very, very positive and inspirational energy in my life.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be calling you later this afternoon and give you some updates on G Street.
Good.
And you know, it's funny, Rafika. You know, people have no idea how powerful we all are. Francisco, to touch back on him, Rafika, and you know, everybody listening. There's very few people, I think, in the corporate landscape that have the authentic presence he does. He's like me. He does a lot of presentations. We're really good with dealing with difficult clients. And a lot of times that difficulty can only come from having a sense that, not that you know it all, it's just that you're not afraid of dealing with the unknown, which is what that client's real issue is. They don't want to fail. And at any given point, those failures, that fear of failure, is really connected to one of the six deadly fears. So to finish this up, the fear of old age.
Just to let you know, you have another caller on the line, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when you are going through something that is life-threatening, you have this fear, and that fear holds you back. Sometimes that fear holds you back from getting the right treatment.
That's, sister, you are preaching, because that is absolutely it. You know, before we take this next caller, I'll finish up these two to connect it. That way when they call in, we'll have gotten this, and then we'll just deal with that. But the fear of old age and the fear of death, so you got the fear of poverty, fear of criticism, fear of ill health, fear of the loss of love, fear of old age, and fear of death. Now, the fear of death, like I was mentioning, they're so connected to the fear of old age is because, you know, there was a book, Napoleon Hill, the Foundation still has it, but it's called A Catalog of the Gods. In this book, what they do is they've listed 30,000 gods which man has worshipped. Think of it for a second. 30,000 gods, from everything from a crawfish to a man. That's why I always tell people, that's why it's little wonder to me that people have become frightened at the approach of death. I will say this, in truth, and I mean no disrespect to anybody's religious or spiritual position, in truth, no man knows and no man has ever known what heaven or hell is like, nor
That's
does
right.
any man know if either place actually exists, because none have ever come back. And I tell people, the very lack of this positive knowledge, meaning someone coming back, opens the door of the human mind to the charlatan so that they can enter and control their mind with a stock of what I call various brands of fraud and mental trickery.
Mm.
Now, the fear of death is not as common as it was during, for instance, the early days in Europe. Like I always make a joke to my physician friends. I go, you know what? If I could ever have a time machine, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get some Robitussin and some Tylenol, and I'm going to go back 4,000 years and become a god. Because a little bit of Tussin gets rid of all kinds of pain. And Tylenol wipes out most stuff, cold, flu, all kinds of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell people, technology is what's filled in the gap for consciousness. So I always tell them, I always make that silly joke to them, but the reality is they need to remember who they're embodying. Because if they can do that, they can tap into energy. Because old man worry kills more people than disease. People worry themselves. My dad has a famous quote. And I've heard other people say it since him. But my dad is the first person I heard say it when I was very young, age of 9. And he said, you can't worry and pray at the same time. You got to pick one. Pick one. He said, either don't worry and work it out, or pray and understand that worry is unnecessary. That's why I said, you could put your foot upon the neck of criticism by reaching a decision not to worry about it.
Mm.
You can acquit yourself of the fear of health by a decision to forget the symptoms. I tell people, you can kill the habit of worry in all its forms by reaching a general blanket decision that nothing which life has to offer is worth the price of worry. And I quote, I wrote this down so I didn't forget. Napoleon Hill said this: with this decision will come poise, peace of mind, and a calmness of thought which will bring happiness.
Hmm.
See? The vibrations of fear, because that's what it is a vibration, passes on from one mind to the other. So that's why you have the group fear concept. It happened during the Holocaust. I say this with all respect to the Jewish people, and I say this because it's very sensitive, but you know what the Germans capitalized on was their fear. Do you realize that had the Germans encountered what I'm about to say, there's a chance it might not have happened? And I'm not saying that I would have been capable of it either. But if 100, when they took the thousands, if 100 would have stepped up and said, kill us to save them, they would have saw something in these people. Don't get me wrong. It takes incredible strength to survive extermination. Black people have done it.
That's right.
They've done it too. I don't relegate one more important than the other. I do say this. To face extermination, I'm talking about a gun in your face. And if anybody's had, if anyone's ever had life-threatening situations, I have. And I've looked death square in the eye, and I'm still here. You don't know what I'm talking about. I was watching Oprah Winfrey last night in closing. He was interviewing LL Cool J. And the gentleman, this transient, quote-unquote, had broke into his house. Now, if anybody's ever seen Brother LL, you know, Todd, I forget his last name, in person, he's the perfect image of what working out should look like, I guess. When you look at the person who broke into his house, and you hear about what LL ended up doing to him, broke his jaw, his rib, and his nose. You look at him, you go, LL was afraid of that guy? But I tell people, you're awakened in the middle of the night by a sound in your house. You're expecting, as he reiterated to Oprah Winfrey, that it's not what you think it might be. You want it to be the positive, like you want it to be the doors just left ajar. Not someone in there. Also, anybody who's ever studied combat, anybody, ask any martial artist, anybody, any soldier, whatever, there's no guarantees that you can defeat your enemy. All you can have is preparation. That's it. And you hope
Very
that you
true.
Can execute under those circumstances.
And I just want to let you know, Greg, that the voice you hear is the caller. The mic is live. We're running
oh,
near
yeah.
the time close.
Okay.
So, person on the line, go ahead.
Please. Yeah, please, go ahead.
How you doing? Good day.
Good day.
Blessings. My name is Brother JR, man, and I love what I'm hearing right now. And I just wanted to ask if there'd be any chance that you would do an episode on actually coming back from difficulties in life, like the gentleman that you just had on the call. He was talking about his life experience and how he, you know, able to bounce back. There's so many people out here, myself included, that as he's talking about fear and stress and all these different things that you know, we take on, you know, and just learning how to, you know, ways to keep going in a sense or overcoming that certain fear that you might have. It could be fear of anything, fear of a doctor, or, you know, going to the doctor, fear of going and looking for a job. You know, there's so much out here. And also, I do know that you had, I believe it's a 60-day challenge.
Yeah, it's coming up.
That's coming up. Yeah,
that's coming up March 1st. It's going to be absolutely free. It's
okay.
Basically going to be a mastermind project that people can involve themselves, so it'll force people to step outside themselves, and I'll give them all the how-tos. The only thing I can't supply is your why-to. You'll need your own will. I can just give you the skill. The skill is easy.
Are you talking about the Insanity Challenge or the one that's starting in March?
They're both. They're both starting in March.
Yeah,
both, because one's for real estate, JR, and one is for anybody. I don't care what someone's after. They'll be able to achieve it if they go head on with this thing. But I'm glad you brought that up. Absolutely.
Thank you.
As far as your request, actually every Monday, that's what Rafika and I are doing about how to come back. I started off this morning by talking about even a personal setback I was having. And I always laugh, as everyone who knows me knows that I say Monday is my favorite day of the week because it just has the most energy. But setbacks are setups for a comeback. Muhammad Ali said, if you can look up, you can get up.
Amen.
If you're here still on the phone, you've already won.
Yeah.
Now you just got to go get your check. That's what the 60-day challenge is about. That's the 60-day challenge.
I will be on that 60-day challenge.
Oh, I know you will. I know you will. And it's going to be powerful. It'll be life-changing. And then lastly, Rafika, in closing, the most deadly of all of these things is the susceptibility to negative influence.
Yes.
And if people can overcome that, they will have freed themselves in every context that the prophets of God, the sages, wise consultants, and most, in closing, our mothers told us, which is think and act for yourself. Do not expect troubles, as they have a tendency not to disappoint.
Well, I think everybody in our listening audience should know the value of what you're doing here every Monday for every person who is trying to get their business together, get their lives together, because sometimes just hearing somebody give you the information at that moment that you need to hear it. And I like how you started out by talking about the six ghosts. And the one thing that came to my mind was that phrase from the movie Ghostbusters, where they said, I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
No ghosts? That's right. I ain't afraid. You just gave your age, too.
I want to thank you once again, Greg Jones, for your time.
Absolutely.
And just know that you can contact Greg at Twitter, at HereGJ. And why don't you give out the rest of the information that you want people to contact you with, Greg?
Yeah, and then they can always reach me at the Real Estate Investment Development Company, USA Closers, by reaching out to me at gj@usaclosers.com. That's the best way to reach me, is by email. Feel free to visit us at www.usaclosers.com. And you can follow my daily adventures on Twitter at hashtag HEARGJ, HEARGJ. And on March 1st, everyone, 2013, look for the launch of my new online portal for everything GJ, as well as a whole bunch of goodies, free books, downloads, forms, contracts, the answers to any question you ever thought you had that you haven't even asked yet. There's just so much going on of good, and I'm just grateful to be on Earth to share it.
Okay, and just remember that this episode is archived along with all the other shows that Greg has done since he's been with us here on the Keys 107 Network. You can listen to them at your leisure. Get your notepad, get your pen, take your notes, and join us again on next Monday from at 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. for another dose of getting your head right with your business with Greg Jones. Thank you, Greg, and may you have a great and wonderful day.
You too, and everyone else. Thank you so much for listening.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.